This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
This is AmTower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. Every week, author, speaker, consultant Mark AmTower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. AmTower Off-Center with your host, Mark AmTower.
Welcome to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. I'm Mark AmTower, and my guest today is a frequent guest, Larry Allen. Larry, welcome back to the show.
Mark, thanks for having me. Great to be here.
We've got a number of things to address today, but you know, start if you would by giving an overview of what's going on in the world of procurement, and then we'll take a dive, starting probably with what's going on at GSA.
Mark, this continues to be an evolving federal market, one where, despite the tightness of budget dollars, the government does not lack for creating new rules and procedures to put in the way of contractors. So if you're going to be doing business in this market as a government contractor, you've got to be dedicated to it. And you also have to be mobile and adroit, if you will, because the new rules keep coming down the pike, whether it's the GSA or OMB initiative for category management, whether it's bending the cost curve coming from the Air Force, whether it's a demand from DOD for cost data, even from commercial subcontractors, new contract methods to contend with. This is a marketplace that is consistently changing, and again, not necessarily in a good way, but a way that I think favors those who are really paying attention and focused. And if you're not, then you need to be.
Yeah, and if you're a newbie, it's going to be more convoluted than probably ever before. But I'm very glad you used the phrase there, new rules, because in March 25, you and I are doing a full day on the new rules of selling products to the government, both the procurement side and the marketing side.
And you're right, Mark. I mean, nobody likes talking about rules. I mean, you and I remember when we were in school, we used to break a few rules ourselves. I know I did anyway. However, if you don't know the rules,
I wore a tie to school.
That didn't help me.
I'm lying.
Yeah. But if you don't know the rules, you can get in trouble. And you can get in trouble a couple of different ways, one of which is you can't really even get out of the starting blocks if you don't know what the new rules are. And that can be a very significant barrier to market entry, as you alluded to a moment ago. But the other way you can get in trouble with new rules that you don't know about is your company has invested a lot in doing business. You've developed an entire marketing program around a certain method, and now you wake up and find that the rules have changed that method, have changed that dynamic. If you haven't anticipated that, your marketing approach just went out the window, and you need to start from square one.
Right, and if you're a small business and you're either a novice or totally new to the market, you have to understand, number one, that there are more rules for small business doing business with the government than any other category.
There are, and this is kind of a thing that I've been talking about lately, which is the government says on one hand that it wants to attract small businesses and it wants to do business with innovative firms. I mean, you look at the well-known government small business contracting goal, 23%, but there are also new innovation labs like GSA's 18F that are all designed around attracting new innovative firms. Yet at the same time, this is a government that is creating more barriers to small business entry. So if you don't have any commercial business, for example, they're not going to look at your prices, they're going to look at your costs. And that's very intrusive, not to mention expensive for small firms. And if you're particularly new and innovative, your cost structure is going to be all over the place. So that is going to make it difficult to marry up the reality with the rhetoric.
Yeah, yeah. So let's migrate here. I mean, along those lines, a handful of key people from GSA got apparently a 15 to 20 minute window in the Oval Office with the president, and they dealt with a couple of fairly significant issues.
They did, and this is really unusual because I've been working in this marketplace for 25 years, Mark, and I don't remember anybody from GSA's Federal Acquisition Service going into the Oval Office on anything other than a tour. And now they went twice inside of a week. And the first time was to talk about their category management program, which started at GSA and has now been picked up by the Office of Federal Procurement Policy with Ann Rung. No surprise there, Mark. Ann came out of GSA.
Right.
But nevertheless, the president wanted to hear about category management. And then they were invited back just a couple of days later, GSA's Federal Acquisition Service, to talk about cost-cutting initiatives that they had in mind. Presumably those included our old favorite, the Federal Strategic Sourcing Initiative, but also the flattening the cost curve that GSA and the price curve that GSA is emphasizing on its schedules program. All in all, if the White House is paying attention to these types of items, you're a government contractor, you need to pay attention to them too.
Okay. So, but, you know, to have, let's call it 15 minutes of meeting, you have 30 minutes of FaceTime with the president, other than photo op, is this, well, I mean, you know, it is what it is, right?
Yes.
There is a significance here, though.
Oh, it's tremendously significant. I think that it's significant that the White House actually asked the Federal Acquisition Service to come over and brief the president. And certainly, you know, I think we can guess that Office of Management and Budget set up that first meeting because, as I mentioned, category management started with GSA, but now is migrating to a government-wide initiative. And at its heart, category management is about letting the people who do certain types of acquisition well in the government run those traps and having other people who maybe don't do it as well focus more on their core missions. So that's substantial. And I think it's notable that category management has the attention at GSA, at OMB, now inside the White House. So if you're a government contractor and you're not familiar with category management, you ought to be. That doesn't necessarily mean, Mark, that category management is a fait accompli. After all, we have maybe 20 to 2 months of this administration left to run, and it takes a while to implement these things. On the other hand, it's notable that GSA has done lots of things, particularly in the federal real estate arena, that arguably garner much more national attention that have not gotten White House attention. And then it's notable that obviously during the discussion they had initially with the president, that they raised some points about how GSA is trying to reduce the government's overall acquisition overhead, and that spawned the second meeting. So when you're looking at that as a contractor, it's notable, and I think it's notable because what this really means is that at the highest level of government, they're looking for more ways to squeeze you as the contractor and get to the lowest price anytime, all the time, with perhaps not a full understanding of what comes along with that lowest price.
Well, yeah, if they're not aware and if they happen to be listening, absolutely lowest price means, you know, number one, low quality, number two, lowest quality vendor. And there's a lot of caveats.
And it really does in this market. It doesn't automatically mean that every time you go for low price. I mean, after all, we're taxpayers, Mark, and we want the government to get a good value.
Good value is not necessarily low price.
That's right. On the other hand, the way this General Services Administration is pushing pricing, it is exactly in the context that you mentioned, where quality is a secondary element at best, even if it makes it into the equation. And we run the risk of having the government drive off in a fleet of Yugos.
I remember those, albeit briefly. Okay, we'll pick this up after the break. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'll be back with Larry Allen after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. I'm here with Larry Allen. We're discussing all things procurement as they impact the buying and selling of products and services to the government, and especially the impact on the contracting community. Larry, you mentioned in the first segment that Ann Rung had brought up the controlling the proliferation of contracts. And yet GSA comes up with apparently new way for cloud services to be bought. What is there a mix-up here?
There is, I think, a mix-up, Mark. And we did mention at the top of the show where Ann Rung, the administrator of the Office of Federal Procurement Policy, is looking at category management as a way to rein in contract proliferation. We also talked about the fact that this is a changing market. And this is a specific example of what we've been discussing. GSA this week has been talking about creating a new cloud discrete government-wide acquisition contract. This despite the fact that GSA already offers at least two ways for government agencies to buy cloud solutions, one through its information technology multiple award schedule contract, even having its own special cloud subheading under that schedule. The other is through the GSA Alliant program, which is very popular and that GSA promotes, as it should, because it's a good program. I would also have to guess, Mark, that there are some cloud services being bought through the sister contract, GSA's OASIS, not to mention some of the other GWACs. We know, for example, that the leaders at NASA SOUP and at NIH would like to add SOUP service or cloud services rather to their own government-wide acquisition contracts. Mm-hmm. So if you have these ready-made vehicles that are already established, the question I have is, why do you need to create a discrete contract solely for cloud, particularly in light of Ann Rung's discussion of reducing the amount of government-wide acquisition contracts and their sister single agency multiple award contracts? It doesn't seem to make sense. We know that cloud is hot. It's a top three federal IT issue, but that doesn't automatically mean and shouldn't automatically mean that every shiny new hot topic gets its own contract vehicle.
But it's a shiny rock, Larry.
It is. And really what it gets to is how the acquisition workforce is rewarded. They're rewarded for putting in new contracts. They're rewarded for starting new programs. It's good career advancement. So to be fair to the people who are thinking about it, look, they want to get ahead just as much as everybody else does. On the other hand, it doesn't really make sense to consistently increase the government's overhead when you have redundant programs that are already available to do the same thing.
Okay. So, you know, there's a lot of other things going on in the market, and one topic that you and I have talked about several times before was reverse auctions, and the GAO report came out last fall on FedBid, and the Air Force moved on that report when nobody else would. So let's talk, not necessarily reverse auctions, we'll get into that, but let's talk about what the impact here is for FedBid.
Well, FedBid today, which has been the largest reverse auction provider in the government acquisition space, finds itself suspended from a government business by the Air Force, as you reference. And the Air Force is strongly contemplating a debarment. You know, suspension is shorter in duration. Debarment could be, you know, a number of years, and would indicate that there's actually been some very serious malfeasance on the part of FedBid and some of the people who work there. Because let's remember, it's not just companies that end up on the short side of the suspended and debarment stick. It's individuals as well. as you like to say, hello. Yeah. That keeps people awake. What it really suggests is that reverse auctions as practiced by FedBid weren't getting the type of oversight that they should have been getting. It suggests strongly that FedBid was advertising one thing and then not doing another in the conduct. And they're actually handling government funds, even if they're a third party. They are helping the government obligate its money, and those types of things need to be taken seriously, and I think that's what the Air Force is saying.
Yeah, and for years I have been hearing rumors, and they are that, but from my perspective, from extremely reliable sources, of untoward things going on during the actual bid process.
Well, and I think a number of those things are coming to light. They've been discussed in the community, as you mentioned, for a number of years. Certainly when I was president of the Coalition for Government Procurement.
Oh, I have to imagine you heard more rumors than me.
These were daily discussions with very disgruntled government contractors, companies who, let's be clear, were in government business for the long haul and had no interest in having their reputations diminished or having some action potentially taken against them because they did business through FedBid. And really what ended up happening, Mark, is a number of credible companies just made the decision that they weren't going to take place in that arena because they didn't want to risk guilt by association, which may not mean much in the commercial world, but in the federal world can certainly be enough to get an IG or whistleblower's attention.
Yeah. Yeah. So, correct me if I'm wrong. I thought I saw something on the GSA website the other day that indicated that I don't even think they mentioned this particular situation. They simply said that reverse auctions were a bright spot for them.
Well, certainly the biggest winner in the short term based on the Air Force's action is GSA because they have their own reverse auction system. And as we talked about, while FedBid has kind of been synonymous with reverse auctions in the federal marketplace, GSA does have its own program. And then there are things that are not at all related to FedBid that are reverse auctions in the public sector, whether we're talking federal, state, or local. Mm-hmm. And so GSA is, I think, trying to say, look, reverse auctions are a credible acquisition method, irrespective of what you might have heard about a specific incident. And we're out here as GSA using reverse auctions to save the government money, which is fine. I don't think that there's anything inherently wrong with reverse auctions. It's a tool, as we've discussed before. The problem becomes when the wrong tool is used for the wrong job. Neither government customer nor contractor end up happy, and the end result is the government ends up spending more than it otherwise would have because they used the wrong tool up front.
Well, it always reminds me of the line from Armageddon where Rockhound's strapped down in the seat and he goes, leans over to Bruce Willis and says, you know, there's 240,000 moving parts in this thing, all of them provided by the lowest bidder.
Right. And, you know, what we haven't touched on is, look, if you're suspended or debarred, what does that really mean? Well, certainly you're done with federal business, but it also means that you're done with doing state government business. It means that you're done with doing local government business.
So it bans you from cooperative purchasing agreements locally?
Yeah. If you're on the excluded parties list, that's an excluded parties list that's public sector wide, Mark. And it goes also down to prime contractors at other levels of government who won't do business with you. Mm-hmm. And that's why some of our colleagues call suspension and debarment the death penalty of government contracting, because if you're a public sector provider and you're banned from doing public sector work, that's it for you.
Yeah. Well, you know, kind of is what it is. Do you want to start on some of the other topics, or do you want to take a break? We got about 2 minutes left here, or we can add 2 minutes to the next segment.
Well, we can jump in and talk a little bit about the Air Force if you'd like.
Yeah,
because we talked about this. The FedBid action started with the Air Force.
Yep.
And of course, it's not just the Air Force. It's government wide in nature, as we mentioned. The Air Force just happened to be the initiating agency. But the other thing that we want to talk about, I think, Mark, in terms of the Air Force, is kind of the dichotomy between they're coming out with their should cost report,
yep,
and they're bending the cost curve initiative, all of which are designed to lower the prices they pay and the costs they incur, versus their support and for small businesses and predisposition towards setting aside work for small businesses, regardless of what the scope might be. How's that for a teaser?
Well, it is a teaser, and that'll take us to the break. You are listening to AmTower Off-Center on 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com, and we will return with Larry talking about this after the break. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I am Mark AmTower, and my guest today is Larry Allen. You can find Larry, I haven't said this yet today, at Allen, A-L-L-E-N, federal.com. Larry puts out a weekly Monday morning email called The Week Ahead that's really, it usually touches three issues, very, very good, very quick read, to give you a you know, what's coming down the pike or the bat that's being swung at your head.
and there's always something in for there for you. And right now what that means is that, you know, you referenced it at the top of our show. You and I are teaching a class March 25th on government marketing. You can find that in the Week Ahead newsletter as well as at Mark's site.
Yeah, and yeah, you can go to federaldirect.net, or you can find us both on LinkedIn. But the new rules of marketing, or the new rules of selling products to the government, will cover not just the marketing side, but the regulation side. And believe me, you need the background on these regulations if you're going to survive, either as an open market vendor, a schedule vendor, or leveraging other procurement vehicles. If you don't know what's happening right now, your market share will erode under you, and you'll find yourself basically out of the market.
Someone will have moved your cheese.
Yeah, moved your cheese in a big way. Thank you, Mr. Johnson. should cost. That's an interesting phrase all by itself.
Well, what we're talking about here is the Air Force recently coming out with a big headline saying that it has saved money by implementing the should cost initiative. And I don't want to pick on the Air Force, because really, Mark, should cost is a DOD-wide initiative. It comes out of the Director of Defense Pricing Office. That's Shay Assad. Shay has been extolling should cost. That's the reason he set up the Defense Pricing Office several years ago, was to get at what things, quote, should cost, end quote. Originally, we were talking about parts really literally for the Joint Strike Fighter,
right,
and ways to reduce acquisition costs for weapons systems. Now we're seeing should cost being expanded out across any number of items and platforms, not at all limited to weapon systems, definitely getting into commercial products. You marry this together with the Air Force's already announced Bending the Cost Curve initiative, which has gotten some press in this community lately. And you're talking about a service branch that is very serious about going throughout the supply chain, not just to prime contractors, but to multiple level subcontractors, in terms of lowering prices, really drilling down into what things should cost, not taking people's word that this is a commercial item that they're offering, if that is in fact what's being presented. But getting into reducing costs throughout, which really puts a lot of pressure on two types of companies. One, it puts pressure on traditional commercial item companies as prime contractors, because they're not set up to do work on a cost basis. They're pricing based. But it also puts a significant amount of pressure on small businesses, whether they're small business primes or small business subs, because these are companies that by their nature don't have the systems, don't have the bandwidth to invest in the type of cost systems that the Air Force seems to want them to have. And also, let's be blunt, what are we really talking about? We're talking about reducing margin.
Right,
LPTA. We're talking about reducing margin for companies that are involved with DoD business. And not everybody can survive on small margins. There has to be an inherent understanding that the government has conflicting mandates when it comes to doing business with small firms. Certainly, we want the government to get a good deal. On the other hand, the government has said there's a value to doing business with small firms. Which is it, guys? You can't say that we're going to drive small businesses out of the market and then be amazed when the government doesn't meet its small business goals. You got to figure it out.
Yeah. And you know, the small business side, so is all of these things tell me that the DoD, in a subtle way, is becoming a hostile market for the small vendor.
Well, I think it really is. You know, I don't know that it's intentional, Mark, but let's be clear what DoD giveth with one hand, which is kind of public pronouncements on wanting to maximize small business use and innovation, particularly at acquisition technology and logistics. On the other hand, they taketh away with things like should cost, with the bending the cost curve initiative, with DoD memorandum coming out of defense procurement and acquisition policy saying that unless you as a subcontractor can show that you have substantial commercial sales, then we're going to get cost data from you. Cold comfort to those small business firms that cost data doesn't have to be certified, Mark, at least not today. So for time being, you have to supply cost data, but at least you can keep the defense contract audit agency out of your shop for today. But then people like you and I who've been in the government market long enough to remember the old test of commerciality.
Yeah.
That's exactly what this sounds like, you know, where you have to show that you have at least 50.1% of your sales to the commercial market at established catalog prices in order to, for that price to be considered as meaning anything by DoD. Otherwise, they're going to get cost data from you, or they're going to require your prime to get cost data from you. And that really is going to selectively determine who is left doing business in the government market. Hint, hint, it's not going to be the innovative firms that you think you're getting. It's going to be the firms who can put up with the hurdles you're putting in their way.
Right. It goes back to the shiny rock syndrome again. You know, post 9/11, we had DHS set up a very innovative program at the time, saying, you know, we're interested in anybody who has security related stuff, and they open an office and zillions of ideas flew in there, the commerciality of which was probably about zero. You have 18F with their initiatives right now. Is it just a shiny rock? Is it window dressing?
Well, it's a big government, and so the great Washington answer is it depends. But I think that at anything other than a niche level, Mark, it's definitely a shiny rock. There'll be niches where innovative things like 18F take hold, but it's not going to be anything across the board, and it's really not going to be anything significant because nobody's changing the rules. As innovative as DHS and 18F want to be, nobody's magically making the FAR go away, let alone the new sub-rules that DoD and others put out on a consistent basis. So that's really at some point going to create a wall that innovative firms run into. And while DoD officials talk about the fact that more companies enter their supply chain every year, I think you want to look at two things. One is who's leaving because they got fed up.
Right.
And two,
what's the attrition?
You're right. Who are you attracting? The fact that you might be bringing in more companies doesn't interest me so much until we understand the relative quality of those companies and whether the quality that they're bringing in matches or exceeds the people who have gone out the exit door.
Right. One of the things that I look at when I'm adopting clients is the retention rate they have for their employees. You know, when I, especially if I'm going to work with a company long term, I want there to be stability there because I want one point of contact. Rarely is that going to be the CEO, depending on the size of the company, it may be. but I want to see, you know, a very strong retention rate, because as I train people in various marketing methods, I want to make sure that there's a chance to implement these things. The same thing here. The longer a company has done business with the government, actually, the better they get.
Right. The better they get, the more specialized skill set they have. And from your perspective, which is important, it's marketing and sales. From my perspective, it's a little bit more on compliance. They're both important. And the bottom line is, if you're a new company, you don't have either skill set the way you should. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to be successful over time and in this market over time, you need to have both. And unfortunately, the trend is that you need more of each right now in order to be successful than if we were having this conversation even 5 years ago.
Right. I mean, 5 years ago, the compliance, I believe, was a little less complicated. It's never been easy.
Never been easy, but right there, the presumption of guilt was perhaps not as strong as it is today.
the presumption, well, yeah, I could argue that on a case-by-case basis, but overall, I think you're right. You are listening to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM, and we will be back with Larry to wrap up this show just after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm here with Larry Allen. Again, Larry and I are doing the new rules of selling products to the government on March 25. The new rules are both the regulatory side, the procurement issues, and the marketing side. So, and we haven't touched much on the marketing side today because Larry's the guest, and he does the regulatory side. Larry, let's touch on the smart pay for a few minutes, because for product vendors, smart pay has always been extremely important.
Smart pay program, Mark, very well established, and really the government, federal government, was one of the first to adopt this program. You know, to the lay people, that's the credit card program that we're talking about. But it's been an excellent way for particularly small product-oriented firms to do business with the government up to the simplified acquisition threshold, which right now is $150,000. It's worth noting, however, that the Department of Defense is advocating increasing that threshold up to perhaps double what it is now, and Congress would have to do that. But that would provide an even more significant opportunity for businesses that wouldn't have to get on a standing contract like a GSA
schedule. I thought that was
schedule.
A FAR issue. Congress has to impede the progress on that?
I think that because it's in, I know it's in DOD's acquisition reform proposal that has been put forward to the House and Senate Armed Service Committees.
Okay, cool.
So,
hopefully.
Yeah, so, you know, it being able to take smart pay has traditionally been a good deal. However, as programs like the Federal Strategic Sourcing Initiative come into play and gain prominence, those types of companies that have benefited from smart pay are really kind of being pushed towards the sidelines. It's a big government, so some of them will never get entirely there, but it's worth noting that the original idea behind having a simplified acquisition threshold and the smart pay program was to allow small businesses to participate in government without having to read the entire book of regulations. And yet, with the ascendancy of the Strategic Sourcing Initiative, the potential ascendancy of category management that we talked about at the beginning of this show, the opportunities to do open market procurements become fewer and further between, and that certainly puts an impact on small firms.
Right. And you know, the smart pay started in the late 80s. Wasn't called smart pay then, it was the impact program, but it's same basic program. It was a way under the micro purchase threshold for open market vendors, companies with legitimate products that frontline managers needed quickly to acquire those products. And it attracted a lot of companies, legitimate firms, to the federal market. But the training over the last few years, I have David Shea comes in occasionally. professional. You know, David, great guy. Runs, from my perspective, one of the best programs in the government, the charge card program. But the training recently has been for card holders to look to contractual vendors as opposed to open market vendors. And I don't have an issue with that.
Well, but it points out what I was saying is that you have to, that the trend is going towards strategic sourcing or GSA schedule,
yep,
and then going to the open market vendors, even as similar to the simplified acquisition threshold, Congress looks at the possibility of increasing the micro purchase threshold. Currently, what, $2,500?
$3,000 now.
And talking about
increased $500 over 20 some odd years. 30 years.
But potentially micro purchases could go up to $5,000. Mm-hmm. But that would be, again, that's a conflicting message that the government sends.
Yeah.
On the one hand, that would seem to open up some opportunities for smaller businesses, particularly new market entries, to establish their bona fides with a government customer. On the other hand, as you mentioned, the training to government holders of the purchase card is to go in a different direction with people they already know.
Right. And, you know, I like to talk about the Smart Pay program because it is an extraordinary program. The government gets rebate for usage on the card from the card processing firms, Visa or the banks that are processing the contracts. You know, and it's just a great program. The only other time it gets any news is when something untoward happens, and when you're dealing with literally hundreds of millions of purchases, that it is an extremely rare occasion. I want to switch tracks here because we only have a few minutes left, and I want to talk about the vacating of the premises by Mr. Tangerlini. You know, people are already talking about his legacy. It's way too soon to go there. And I think anybody who's prognosticating what the legacy is producing methane. But I want to talk about who might replace him.
Well, I think it's interesting to me, Mark, what I'm hearing is that Dan Tangerlini will be replaced. We're kind of right on that cusp in an time of an administration where you can make an argument either way, but
do we need one for the
22 months?
Yeah.
Right. But because the administration seems inclined to fill the administrator spot, which I think is generally a good move, you'd hate to have an acting administrator in for maybe 4 years.
Yeah.
I think the reality is, given the fact that we have 22 months, we're going to see an administrator candidate who's already somewhat known and at some level vetted. So somebody like a Nick Nyack, who just left this past summer as the chief procurement officer from DHS and widely known for being an innovative person, somebody who's already known in the community.
Pretty well respected.
And very well respected, yeah. Nick, rightly so, for doing a lot of innovative things. He could bring some interesting innovation potentially to GSA.
Mm-hmm.
Other names that I've been hearing, potentially Alan Shvatkin from the Professional Services Council.
Another brilliant man in that role.
Brilliant guy who previously has been in government, so he's been vetted, and his confirmation would be relatively short, I would think.
Same thing with NIAC.
Same thing with NIAC.
Slam dunk.
And then the third name is potentially Bill Gormley, the former Assistant Commissioner of the Federal Supply Service, now the head of Gormley Group, been in industry for at least a dozen years now, but similarly, career government guy who understands that type of thing and has a track record, so that his confirmation might not be lengthy as well. Any of those three candidates, I think, would be credible administrators and bring a good focus into the into GSA, one that would, I think, optimally help temper the message and rebalance GSA's message between being very, very price driven and understanding that, you know, we actually want to be doing business with quality companies too.
Yeah, and I think equally, you know, I think this is what you imply. They all resonate with the contractor community in ways that others may not.
Well, they do. I mean, particularly somebody like a Bill Gormley and an Alan Shvatkin, who have been on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
More recently, Nick Nyack has had a little bit of experience, but you know, it's only been a few months since he left DHS.
I don't know that he's actually doing things right now, because his LinkedIn profile indicates that he's on an extended vacation.
Right.
And God bless him if he is.
That's probably deservedly so after working at DHS. But you know, the fact that they would resonate because they have seen both the federal and private sector perspectives, that's the type of thing that I think you would want in any high-ranking government official, whether it's a GSA administrator or anyone else for that matter. You don't want to have somebody who's just come up through the ranks of government, because that might produce a little bit of myopia without a real full understanding for what it's like to have a P&L, profit and loss statement, that you have to manage to, and the impact that that means for your employees. So it will yet to be seen who the administration might tap for the GSA top job, Mark. But certainly I think it would be from the list of usual suspects.
Yeah. My personal fear is they may tap into a law firm, marquee name, but...
Well, that certainly is a possibility. And then, you know, let's be honest, not picking on this administration, because it's true of all administrations, regardless of party. There are people that have been supporters that haven't gotten perhaps what they think is their just desserts.
Reward, yeah.
And looking at that list and who you could put in at this stage of the administration to give them just desserts. But my caution is that the GSA administrator's job may not be as sweet a dessert as you think it is.
Well, there you go. Again, Larry, thanks for coming in, man.
Mark, thanks. Always a pleasure to be here.
Larry and I are doing our tag team routine, March 25, the new rules of selling products to the government. Drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.com if you are interested in information on that. Go to Larry's site, allenfederal.com. Sign up for his newsletter. You'll see an announcement there as well. But you know, more importantly, you'll get a weekly dose of Larry's view of the market. And believe me, that's worth your time. I have been a subscriber since he started. And again, you're listening to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Thank you very much for listening, and tune in next week.
You've been listening to AmTower Off Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off Center, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.